Thank you very much. As Guy told you, I got the question, why do central bankers give speeches and how do I try to write them? And for myself, the underlying question is, why do they actually give me a job? Why do they need me? I know there are some ECB colleagues. I thought it was a speech for a rather non-central bank specialist. If there's anything wrong, I say, please just jump in. For many people, central banks are mysterious institutions. That's why we have a question mark on the top of our Bundesbank building, because few people understand what we do. Alan Greenspan, the former president of the Federal Reserve in the US, once said, I guess I should warn you, if I turn out to be particularly clear, you've probably misunderstood what I've said. Why is it that so many people do not understand what central banks do? On this slide, you see how the Austrian Central Bank tries to explain the effects of the monetary policy transmission channel. I am pretty sure it's in German, okay, but you will probably not understand it, and I have to admit, I don't understand it either. And that shows where the problem lies. But even if people do not understand what we do and why we do it, everyone trusts us. Jacques Delors once remarked, not all Germans believe in God, but all Germans believe in the Bundesbank. So instead of a question mark on the top of our building, we rather have this halo hanging over it. This is because the Bundesbank's public image is very much attached to the D-Mark and the Wirtschaftswunder in Germany, the so-called miracle on the Rhine, the economic upturn in the 1950s and 60s. We are an independent institution politically, financially, and in terms of personnel. And as a result of our status as a totally independent institution in a democracy, and we have, of course, the system of checks and balances, but we are still independent, we have to be very accountable. This means we have to explain what we do based on our clear and narrow mandate of price stability. Price stability is something that is rather abstract, and so it is not easily understood. But like many things in life, you don't know you have price stability until you lose it, and the Germans have this idea or this remembrance of the hyperinflation in the 1920s, and that's why they say, okay, the Bundesbank has this halo because we have this price stability. So you see, our task is complex, which is why communication has always been of some importance to us. But the importance has steadily grown over the last few years, and so have the jobs for speechwriters at central banks. And there are several reasons for this. First, we have a high balance sheet. I'm a road cyclist, and in summer I finished a road bike race, and looking at this, I would say, okay, up there, this is a serious summit to go up. This is because of the last economic and financial crisis. Central bankers played an important role in tackling these crises, for example, by buying a lot of bonds. And like that, central banks' balance sheets reached unprecedented levels. And this is the euro system's balance sheet, so of the whole euro system central banks. And coming with this bigger balance sheet, also the public role of central banks has grown. This is the second reason why central banks' communication is more important by now. As we have a bigger public role, there are more politicians that try to interfere in central banks' independence. And I just have two examples for that the very well-known Trump. He says, as usual, the Fed did nothing. There's a second tweet, and he asks, who is our bigger enemy, Jay Powell or Chairman Xi? Just to remind you, he even put Jay Powell into position, so it's quite bizarre that he has such a lot of criticism on a person he even put in place. Of course, like everyone else, central banks want to respond to such criticism and want to show that we actually know what we are doing. And I have another fun fact for you. JP Morgan actually established its own index to show the influence of Trump tweets on interest rate level volatility. So they look, okay, there's a Trump tweet, what happens to the interest rate? Does it go up or down? And the third reason why communication is so important to us is the idea whether the economy actually works like an economic model or works via perceptions. There's a well-known saying, it's the economy stupid, it's the Bill Clinton's election campaign slogan. But during the last financial crisis, economic researchers all around the world saw, okay, maybe we don't know how the economy actually works. is it a question of rational agents and models and rational behavior like we see it on the left side and as we know it from economics classes? Or do economic players sometimes act in a less rational way, for instance, with perceived expectations based on psychology and communication? And do they actually discuss whether this is a 6 or a 9, as we see it on the picture? And central banks accepted that maybe the economy doesn't work in a monocausal way. That's what makes the monetary policy transmission channel so difficult, as I showed you from the Austrian Central Bank. The central bank's task is complex because there are so many people talking about it and interfering and a lot of psychology inside. And we have a lot of indirect impact channels. But if we accept that these perceived expectations in the economy are important, we also have to accept that communication is important. And maybe more important than previously thought and more important than it is taught in most economics classes. And there's a fourth reason why we give speeches. Of course, even central bankers have an ego, and this ego has to be stroked from time to time with public speeches. For these reasons, communication has ceased to be a nice to have for central banks, and it has even become a serious instrument of monetary policy. After every monetary policy meeting, the ECB hosts a closely observed press conference. And Mario Draghi, you see him here, he gives a speech at this press conference. Actually, the speech is not very interesting because most of the time it's basically the same speech. But this makes it so interesting because the journalists, they look at every single word and even at every single punctuation mark that changes. And they always interpret, oh, he made an exclamation mark and not a dot any longer. So what does that mean? A part of his statement is called the forward guidance. These words are meant to steer the monetary policy expectations. And this forward guidance is even decided on by the ECB's governing council. So all national governors from the national central banks sit together and decide on this communication. So you see how important it has become. And this forward guidance is a closely watched measure of monetary policy. And I think it's even in the same level like the interest rates or the asset purchase program. And there's already quite a body of scientific research on the economic impacts of central bankers' communication, and the ECB also has guiding principles on the external communication for the high-ranking officials. So you see, we accept the power of communication. We also accept this power because we acknowledge that the market is very, very sensitive to forward guidance and to central bankers' communication. Sometimes communication even speaks louder than our actual actions. This slide, I hope you can see it well, shows the spread between the Italian and German sovereign bonds. The curve, the yellow line, represents the spread. That is the difference that the Italian government has to pay when they take up public debt. And that's what they have to pay more than the Germans. So actually, the higher the spread is, the more the investors believe that Italy might not pay back its debt. The greater the spread, the higher the investors believe the risks are. A very simplified view is the greater the difference, the more some investors think that Italy might go bankrupt and fall out of the euro. And the spread, this risk premium, as we call it, of Italy, went up a lot in 2011 and 2012. You see it here, there's a first height and there's a second height. And at this point, Mario Draghi gave a speech, and I think you all remember three words of it. It was a very short speech, and he just, maybe it's a catastrophe speech, and he said, whatever it takes. To give the quote a bit more context, he said, within our mandate, that's the central banker's part, the ECB is ready to do whatever it takes to preserve the euro. And believe me, it will be enough. And obviously it was enough because you see the spread after this speech, that was a speech, so it went down to here. This speech was followed by some action as the ECB's governing council decided on a program, the so-called outright monetary transactions program. It was a program that decided, okay, we can buy sovereign bonds. But actually, this program has never been put in place, so we never bought a single sovereign bond. Only by communication, this whole risk premium went down. And this shows how important communication is. There were other programs and we bought sovereign bonds, but still, this effect was only caused by communication. I think it's quite bizarre. Given the strength of our communication, you can probably understand why central bankers feel the need to communicate. So today, central banks all around the world accept the power of communication and the need for speeches. There even is a newsletter issued by the Bank for International Settlements, that is the International Central Bank for Central Bankers. This newsletter announces all published speeches by central bankers all over the world. And there are also a lot of funny speeches in it. I especially enjoy reading the Bank of Mauritius speeches, of course, because I plan my holidays there, but also to see what challenges they have concerning monetary policy. But this power of communication also makes central bankers very cautious about what they say and what will be published. If you have a market-moving power, what we obviously have, you have to use that power carefully. This also means that sometimes it is perhaps better not to say anything meaningful, to stay a bit vague, to resort to constructive ambiguity, as we often call it, and ambiguous language on sensitive issues. And the German press once put it right, in the world of central banks, every word can be one word too much. And actually, that maybe doesn't make writing speeches for central bankers all that easy. I have a great job. I have a job where speeches might move the market. But I deal with speakers who have to be on their guard, who don't want to use too many words and don't want to say a lot. So perhaps my job isn't quite as great as it might seem from the outside. In July, when Brian asked me to deliver this speech to you, of course, I felt very honored. Thank you again. He gave me the idea of thinking about what advice I might give to Christine Lagarde's new speechwriter, and maybe here's even someone around who will apply for it. And I think that's an interesting scenario. What do you need to know to become a central banker speechwriter? What challenges are you going to face? Let me focus on 6 challenges I fight with in my daily life at office, and I'm sure these are also challenges that you face in your jobs. Challenge 1 is, what am I allowed to write? I told you about the market-moving power we have, and central bankers are afraid to be too clear. And I almost always have the wording police in my head, or the strict teacher, as you see on the slide. So I try to orientate all my monetary policy statements in my speech as close as possible to Bundesbank policy positions. That's sometimes a bit boring, but I start fighting with the people writing these policy positions. Sometimes it's a fight for every single word. If you simplify, you might also falsify the real meaning of the forward guidance. But in this fight, I found one argument to be very strong, because I fight with economists, and economists, as we all know, they look at numbers. And so I tell them we have to be comprehensible, we are a public institution. And to achieve comprehensibility, my tools are clear and data-driven indicators. You all know these indicators. It's the length of a word, or the length of the sentence, the number of words, etc. My experience is that economists love numbers, and they feel more at ease when they see that something as alien to them as communication can also be dealt with using numbers. Challenge 2, how do I explain difficult topics? You already know this picture, and I'm sure you all face this challenge, but sometimes I have the impression that monetary policy is extremely difficult and mostly very abstract. Of course, the Bundesbank can talk about the new euro banknotes and coins, but most of our speeches deal with abstract things. Of course, we look for images and metaphors, but it's not an easy task. Sometimes I just have to accept that we talk in an abstract way, and this is as difficult as appreciating abstract art, I think, and this might even be abstract art. The definition of myself is I see it as a translator between the monetary policy world and the world outside. And as the translator's Bible says, stay as close as possible to the original text, but be as free as necessary. And I always try to be as free as necessary to explain that. After writing, I sometimes ask my mom. She's a German and English teacher, but she has hardly any idea about the monetary and economic world, and she is my proofreader. She marks everything she finds hard to understand, and sometimes she marks a lot, and then I enter more explanation. And I also have a trick, and I have benefited greatly from when I started working for the Bundesbank. I may have known something about writing speeches, but I didn't know much about monetary policy. So in order to learn, I made a list of words I was unfamiliar with, and I asked my colleagues to explain them to me. In the meantime, I used this list in a different way. I know that probably quite few people outside know these words. So I write a speech, and then I look at the list and mark all the words I have used that I did not know before starting to work there. For some examples of these words are minimum reserves, the portfolio rebalancing channel, or reverse auctions. And you see they are not nice words either. The third challenge is, how do I stay up to date in a very large institution? It's not by playing the roulette, as you might think, but I have 10,000 colleagues in my institution. Of course, work in the office is all about coffee, coffee, coffee. You all know that. Go out and talk to the people. At the Bundesbank, we even have an institution for this coffee or lunch. We have what is known as the Mittagsroulette or the lunch roulette, where you arrange lunch dates with random people from your institution you don't know. And that's why you see a roulette on my slide. The lunch roulette is a guaranteed way to learn new things. And by the way, it is also good because I always have to explain what I do as a speechwriter at the Bundesbank, and that helps me to sort out things for myself. And sometimes also to try out whether an image or a story in a speech actually works. The second important thing is that my job in this institution is not located within the communications department. So I'm not with all other people doing communication, but I'm in the markets department. So I sit with all the market analysts, the traders, and the specialists. And I go out and have a coffee with them, and they provide me with a lot of technical ideas and input. They do not understand my job, and I do not understand their job. But in the end, we have a good product all together. And of course, I also read. I read the speeches from my ECB colleagues. I read the speeches of other board members. I read press releases and market analysis. That's what our job is about. Challenge four, how do I reach different listeners? There are a lot of people listening to central banker speeches, although most of the time they are quite boring. We have journalists from the economics department. We have market analysts. We have economic forecasters all over the world. We have politicians. We have the academic world of monetary policy. We have other central bankers. And of course, we want to reach the general public. The problem is all our news, never mind which speech we give and who we give it to, all news can be market sensitive and market moving. Therefore, when we explain monetary policy to the general public in a broader way, we have to be careful to make the message clear for market analysts as well. Otherwise, they might misinterpret us and move the market. We also take care about which speeches we actually publish. We do not publish all the speeches, and some speeches that are off the record are maybe even more interesting. But please don't tell a journalist that I said that, otherwise they might not be off the record any longer. And when writing a speech, I often try to actually draw a picture of the typical listener. Is he old? Is he young? Is he male, female, whatever? I really draw the picture on a piece of paper. I always throw it away because I'm not really talented in drawing. But this really helps in thinking about, okay, who is my boss actually talking to? And it also helps that my colleagues and me, we are all very different people with different backgrounds and we speak different languages. For example, I know one of my speechwriting colleagues at the markets department, he actually speaks the language of market analysts. So when talking to market analysts, I just think that Stefan, my colleague, would give the speech. So also thinking about the language your public or your people you want to talk to actually speak, that helps a lot. Challenge five, you might have noticed English is not my mother tongue. And when I once applied for the German diplomatic service, I almost failed the English language test. But in fact, I have the impression that this is sometimes an advantage because my speaker, she's not a native speaker either. I try to stick as close as possible to her English vocabulary, to use the same English as she does, to write even shorter sentences and to use even fewer words. Only a few weeks ago, we wrote a speech in English on structural changes in financial markets. The topic is difficult and unfortunately, so was our language. Luckily, we have a language service at the Bundesbank and I really love these colleagues. This time we had a very difficult speech to ask them, oh, please simplify the language, and the result was just perfect. And my conclusion for non-English native writers is, never make the mistake of wanting to show off with your good language skills. Never use all the words you have once learned at school just to use the word because you learned it. And just keep it as simple as you can. And this will also make your speaker sound more authentic. The sixth challenge is, how do I deal with the personality of central bankers? Maybe you see Jens Weidmann, the Bundesbank president, overlooking all the Frankfurt banks, all the skyline. And of course, dealing with speakers is never easy. But central bankers, they have a lot of fears. Mario Draghi once said, my job is to be worried and to worry everyone else. So you see, central bankers have a lot of fears, and one of these fears is also, of course, like every speaker's fear is the fear of bad headlines. And I think Jens Weidmann would especially fear to say, oh, I love the low interest rates. This would be a catastrophe for us. So it is about, again, being maybe a bit vague and a bit ambiguous, but you have to know the fears and address them. And it is important to know your speaker's thoughts on his or her public image and maybe his or her further career. Do they want to address and impress the scientific community? Do they want to boost public discussion and animate politicians to act? I always try to pin down my bosses to talk to me and to tell me what they want to achieve by giving speeches. Of course, this is difficult, and sometimes they do not have a clear answer to this question. But even thinking about it is already an important step, and I adapt my language and my arguments accordingly. But that's enough talk about challenges. Coming back to Alan Greenspan and Jacques Delors, maybe, I hope I have been particularly clear today, and I hope you still believe in the Bundesbank. Central banks are sometimes fun, and thank you for listening.